Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Silozins, and welcome to a very special episode of Wool Shift Dust, a Silo TV podcast.
And hello, the Lorehounds.
What a magnificent day. I hope everyone's going to enjoy this bonus episode in your feed, and thanks for having us.
Today, I am joined, as you can see, not by Luke, but by the two master Lorehounds themselves, David and John, for a mid-season, well, just after mid-season, roundtable on Silo, the Apple TV mystery box thriller based on one of my favorite series of books.
Thanks for having us, Alicia. I mean, I'm liking this show a lot. I'm glad that we get to chat with you about it for a little while, and I'm really enjoying the podcast. So thanks. I'm honored to be on Wool Shift Dust.
Yeah, I've been itching as well to talk about the show a little bit. And so I'm glad we could do this sort of crossover feed.
I've been looking forward to it. We've been talking about it, and I can't wait to, I've heard some of your thoughts in the Discord, but I'm really excited to hear your full thoughts on, you know, my baby Silo.
Yes.
So for the listeners, during this episode, we're going to be keeping it short, not focusing on any episode in particular, but looking at the series so far as a whole, and keeping this very special episode very special, especially for anyone listening on the Lorehounds feed who might not have seen Silo yet. We're going to open with a quick spoiler-free round of discussion with our top-level impressions. After that, the usual spoiler rules are in effect. We'll be talking details of everything up to and including episode 6, The Relic, and the equivalent sections of Wool, the first book in the Silo series the show is based on, are also on the table. We'll give you a warning before we venture to the down deep where the spoilers are, though, like my usual co-host Luke, John and David have also not read the books, so we definitely won't be spoiling any of the future twists after episode 6.
No, we haven't read the books. I may read them after this because I'm really liking it, and I have a hard time resisting joining the book reader crowd once I'm into something, so we will see, but I'm really excited to dive deeper into the story.
Yeah, and John will probably finish all three books in about a day and a half, the way he reads.
No.
I mean, these are books that make you want to do that, so.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I totally didn't see this show coming. I did a whole ton of research at the beginning of the year or the end of last year to map out what was going to be on different things. So on our Lorehounds channel, we could figure out, you know, have some sense of what we were going to record. And I didn't see this anywhere in the main conversations around television. It was only, I don't know, I guess it was just within the fandom of Silo that it was,
right,
that people were aware of it. But I didn't see it on any of the, on Variety, on Playlist, on Premiere Date. None of those websites had this. So for me, it's like fresh out of the box. It's great.
Yeah. And for book fans, like a lot of us read it about a decade ago, and this show has been in production nearly as long. It's been going from, you know, different networks, different producers. And so it kind of snuck up on me that it was finally being released, I don't know, like 6 months later or something. It's like, well, I have to do something about this. I was so evangelical about the books when, you know, around the 2013 when Dust, the final one, came out.
Okay.
Nice.
But for anyone who is new to Wool Shift Dust, the Lorehounds are the publisher of this podcast, and their feed is full of content just like this, deep dives into books, films, and popular television from Tolkien to Ted Lasso.
Yeah, we just wrapped up coverage of Barry, Ted Lasso and White House Plumbers. We decided to cover that because that was a sort of a standalone thing. So that was a lot of content that we just shoved out the door. And coming up, we've got stuff like Ahsoka. What else are we doing, John? Wheel of Time, obviously.
Obviously.
The whole deal. We're doing everything.
We're not doing everything.
We're doing everything. You got a show? We're covering it.
You crazy, man. You're going to kill us. We keep saying, oh, we got to slow down. We got to take it a little bit easier. And then more shows come out. And we're like, well, we have to cover it. We can't not cover it.
I mean, it's they keep saying peak television has peaked, but I don't know. It still seems to be coming hard and fast for me.
Yeah, it's
for
it's,
sure.
It's big.
But about this TV show, what are your overall impressions of Silo? What were the things that you guys liked the most or some things you aren't sure about?
John, you want to?
David, why don't you go first?
Oh, gosh. Well,
oh, wow. We're all so polite. So polite. Oh, after you and after you, sir.
As a podcaster of other content, books and shows and such, I'm really enjoying Silo because I don't have to do any work around it. I can just purely enjoy the aesthetics, the plots. I don't have to turn my quote unquote work brain on. I don't have to watch it several times. So from that aspect, I am definitely enjoying it. I think the production values are wildly great. I cannot believe the degree that they have built these sets and designed these costumes and these props and everything. The Barbican curve thing, I love it. It's everywhere. I'm so nerding out on that little design flourish. I think you pointed a couple, one of your listeners pointed that out. I love that. The acting, it was a little bit, if in the character, you know, the actors, I was a little bit scratching my head, but I'm settling into it now. I was a little bit skeptical of Common, just because he's such a big presence. And I was like, oh, is he going to fit into this role? Because he's a really powerful actor. And Tim Robbins, I was like, wow, these are really big people and with big roles. Are they going to overbalance the production? And they seem great. They're settling into the roles really nicely. The mystery box elements are great. They're paying them off. That's a big concern I always have with mystery box shows.
Right.
Is how fast, you know, we all got, well, not all, I shouldn't say all of us, but a lot of us were impacted by Lost, right? You know, the never ending mystery and every solved element brought out five more that then they didn't always pay off very quickly. And so you were always on edge. And so I like it when, if we're getting, as long as we're getting clues or we're getting good payoffs, and they seem to be doing that well at a good pace. Who doesn't love a science fiction dystopia mystery box show? Yeah. So I'm having a good time.
And the benefit this has over Lost is that it hasn't, you know, it's all been written. So all of the things people are questioning, there are already existing answers. You know, it's not like...
Exactly.
That was that kid's name, Walter, who just got too tall and we never saw him again.
Right.
Oh, boy.
And that's one of the great things about adapting books, things like The Expanse or, you know, we've been covering The Rings of Power and there's some drawbacks there. We talk a lot about what we call the shippy test. Do the television or movie adaptations, you know, keep within the core of what the story is doing, what, you know, originally was written? And so can you make adaptations that fit? And as far as I can tell, as obviously not a book reader, everything is seamless to me and it feels really good and everything is making sense on screen and it's making sense in the world. So it senses to me that they're making good choices. But, you know, I'm not a book reader, so I can't validate that. But at least it feels natural to me.
Well, that's important that, you know, even someone who hasn't read the books comes in and it feels natural and it makes sense for book readers. Yeah, there's always two camps. There's the purists who are mad about every little change and the people who who are excited that, you know, I get to be surprised too.
Yeah. Purists are going to pure. So
yeah, exactly.
What can we do?
And what about you, John? What are your overall impressions?
Yeah, you know, I picked up the show basically because you were covering it. I would not have started watching the show if this podcast didn't exist.
Exactly. We're here because
my work is done.
And I turned it on and I intended to watch just the one episode for now. And I just had to watch both episodes because it was so good. And that surprised me because I think in The Rings of Power, I was talking to David about how sick I was of mystery boxes.
Right.
And how I just didn't need, you know, who's the stranger? Who's Halbrand? Who's this? You know, all these mystery boxes that don't pay off until the end of the season. And there's not these mini mystery box arcs like there are in something like Severance, where I think that something that you'll have these mini mystery box arcs where something will be revealed over time. And that's what I'm seeing in this show is the latter, is the more positive mystery box show where, as David was saying, you're rewarded for your investment and you are not left pondering for episodes and episodes and 24 episode seasons to figure out why there's a polar bear on the right. island. And yeah, so I mean, I'm just enamored with it on that point. Rebecca Ferguson's American accent aside, she's doing an amazing job.
Right.
I think the rest of the cast is doing really great. Love to see Jorah Mormont back in action.
More of him next week.
Yeah. Oh, good. I'm having a blast with it. And like David said, I'm really enjoying watching as just a viewer and a listener to a podcast instead of a person who has to analyze it on a weekly basis. Right. So thank you for taking that off our plate for sure.
Totally glad you were there to scoop this one up, Alicia. And we're so glad that, I mean, you were a great contributor, and it's just really been great to be able to interact with you on this stuff. And now we've got MCU things going on and we've got this. So it's been really fun for us to widen our community and have you come in. It's really great to see you jump in and grab this podcast and really run with it. So,
yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's something that I'm passionate about. And I think one of the things that, you know, translates well from the books to the screen, that even though it's done differently, is it's about the characters in the end. It's like there is the mystery box. There are all of the mystery elements, but the reason why it hurts so badly when certain characters die is because you become attached to them so quickly.
Right.
Right.
And so these are characters who have sat in my head for like a decade. So I almost had no choice but to do this.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that, well, no, now we have to save it for the spoiler section.
All right. Well, before we jump into spoilers, I just want to ask, as newbies to the show, to this story, to whom would you recommend this show?
The begrudged Lost fan, okay, for sure. Fans of Severance, yeah, I think, would really like this. Fans of Westworld would really like this, especially early Westworld.
Yeah,
I think it's of that,
sure,
kind of quality. And the soundtrack sounds like Westworld.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people could sing.
Yeah,
the opening credits sequence is very Westworldy.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. I think that the drama's there. It's charming in its small moments, and I think so. If you're into like a character development show, I think that that's there here. I would recommend it to anybody, really. But I think those are sort of the markers there.
Chernobyl.
Right. Chernobyl's great.
I think Luke, your co-host, your regular co-host, had even suggested that, you know, the color grading that they're doing reads very, very Chernobyl as well. Yeah, I don't think you have to be
into sci-fi,
a sci-fi person, like you said, because it's character forward. The sci-fi element can just be a contextual aspect of it, because it is about political power. It's about a society, a very what if we took a society and we contained it this way? How would that work? And the world building that they're doing with that. So I think anybody who's interested in character and character drama could enjoy the show without any problem at all.
Right.
And then the sci-fi stuff is sort of on the side. I mean, you know, Last of Us fans could enjoy it.
Yeah.
Expanse fans, Game of Thrones. But these are all our core listeners anyway. Yeah. So
I mean, the Last of Us fans have their hearts hardened enough for the first few episodes.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Well, on that note, I hope that anyone who's considering whether or not to watch it feels like they have enough information. If not, jump into the Lorehounds Discord Silo channel, ask away your questions, link in the show notes. But for now, we are going to jump into the spoiler section. Woo-hoo. We're going to start talking freely. So if you don't want to know what's happened in the last six episodes, now's your time to check out. All right. For those of you who are left, it's time to get into the gritty silo details.
plan on flying? In order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID. Learn how to get your real ID today at tsa.gov/real ID or visit your local DMV.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
So yeah, you guys already gave a little love to the production design. What do you think of the world building within the silo? Does that strike you as convincing and cohesive?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, it feels like a lived culture. I liked the day of, what was it? Day of Forgiveness.
Yeah, Forgiveness Day. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I liked that. I liked, you know, this whole, like, the process of approving the birth in the first, or the
right.
The, I almost want to say breeding, because that's how they're treating it, you know.
Well, they call it the lottery.
The lottery. It's pretty gross, but yeah. What really is shocking about that is how everyone's congratulating them on the way that everybody knows,
right?
And it just really portrays right away there is no privacy in this silo, and it's not just a government surveillance thing; it's just this non expectation of privacy,
right? Yeah,
and that immediately struck me. The desperation of down below has been very clear. The sort of classism has been very apparent in subtle ways, like the, oh, what do you eat down there? Children? Yeah. Or yeah, it's great. It's great at showing, not telling, what the society is like.
Agreed. Yeah. Yeah. I love all those little things, like the runners, you know,
the porters,
how do you get, the porters. That's it. Sorry. How you get messages around. Where's email? I mean, they have computers, so they have a network.
Yeah, so in the books, there is email, but it's expensive, so it's less expensive to use a porter. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, I love the Barbican bevel, as we, you know, talked about. I really love that level of production design, but I think it's an interesting question to say, here's a society, it has a certain amount of resource consumption, and there's a certain carrying capacity for this ecosystem. And so there's these real hard constraints. You know, what's the birth rate? I think like 10,000 plus or minus a few hundred at any given time, I would guess.
I think they try to keep it pretty strictly 10,000.
Right. I mean, you're going to have fluctuations because of, you know, the way human
But that's what the lottery's for. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. But then, you know, what if you get twins, or, you know, what if suddenly there's an industrial accident and it wipes out 50 people? Right. So you're going to have this fluctuation. That's all well within norms. But I think it's an interesting question. And I think a lot of people have compared this show to Snowpiercer as well,
right,
on the train with classes and stuff. I think I saw the movie. I didn't watch any of the television shows. But so I think it's a really interesting conundrum. It's a really interesting question. How do you structure society? How do you have a free society within these ecological constraints, which I think is a very relevant thing that we're facing on our planet? Because our planet has a, you know, carrying capacity to a degree. We can do a lot with technology, but there's always these trade-offs and impacts. And so condensing it down and then building it in this silo, this vertical stack, I think is very innovative and very interesting, you know, whereas we might go with a dome or a bubble. For whatever reason, they decided to do it with this drilling thing. And I think it's I think it's really unique and designed and well thought. It makes me think of Dune or The Expanse, where the writers, or even Martin Gurm himself, you know, and Tolkien, obviously, going back to our roots, the depth and complexity and how much the author has thought through these questions and then put that into words is great. And I love to see that level of care and detail, and to be able to translate that to screen is it's a real joy to participate in that way, to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. And you already talked also about the music. Icelandic composer. I seem to love Icelandic composers. Atli Erfursson. And yeah, the cinematography, there's been a few different people working on it, but I think like the stairs especially just lend themselves so well to just the swooping camera and just showing like the different striations of levels of life in the silo.
I was surprised that they didn't have safety nets for stuff getting dropped down the sides. I was like, wait a minute, why wouldn't you have some sort of safety things? But yeah, the stairs are a very cool design feature.
Well, because judicial needs somewhere to dispose of people. Exactly. That's why they have safety nets.
Ouch. How are people going to accidentally suddenly commit suicide in opportune times?
We're talking about the White House plumbers, but these are the silo plumbers. You know, they are just sending people down, going into the janitorial closet, and figuring out what they need to do, I guess.
So what do you think's in the janitorial closet, John?
I mean, I assumed it was what we saw at the end of last episode with the surveillance, but I could be wrong.
Which was I got such hard Lost vibes from that end of episode 6.
Oh, yeah.
That,
the others.
Yeah. That really, really connected me to that. But I'm glad, that's where I was saying before, I'm glad that they're paying off these mysteries. They could have played the janitor's closet for the entire season and maybe teased us at the end, but they didn't. They gave it to us in the next episode, which then opens up a bunch of more questions. And I really like that. Pay me off and then set up the next stuff. And so I was really happy to see that there is this sort of, not happy to see that there are people observing, you know,
right.
But I'm really happy to see that the mystery was paid off quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're really messing with book readers too, with this too.
Really?
I mean, with a few different things, like for example, well, I mentioned it in the podcast, but when they did the fake out with Marnes hanging himself, but it was actually a punching bag.
Oh, right.
That was specifically to mess with book readers, especially. And then with this screen, you know, this room full of screens, yeah, there's a lot of us that thought that it might be something from another book, and Hugh Howey's going around online saying, no, it's not what you think it is.
Hmm.
So, yeah. So
interesting.
My mind's imploding too.
Howie's been on Twitter a lot too, commenting on changes in the show, which has been appreciated, I think. I noticed, and I think you mentioned this on your podcast, the whole change of the stair material and the stair width so that it was easier for film and so that you could actually hear things when people spoke instead of hearing metal stairs. So I really do appreciate how transparent he's been. It's like having J.R.R. Tolkien tweeting about the Rings of Power.
Right. Yeah. No, it's great that he's always so open to talking about things. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, who are your favorite characters in the show right now?
David.
Oh,
David's not my favorite character. I'm just opening it up for
what? You just broke my heart, John. I thought I was your. Am I at least your favorite podcaster?
Sure.
I am really intrigued by this. It's less the character thing and what the character represents. So Tim Robbins, Bernard is, you know, he's head of IT, but now he's head of the civilian administration. Common being what is this sort of, I think he's even playing at a level that the judge doesn't know. So I think that's really interesting. Because are the janitors part of judicial or are they extrajudicial in that regard? I think Ian Glenn, his performance is a little bit funky. His work is a little bit off. Rebecca Ferguson, she was in Dune, right? She was,
yes.
Yeah. So I didn't.
And Mission Impossible is the other one she's really famous for in Dr. Okay. Sleep.
Yeah, so I'm not a big Mission Impossible watcher. And Dune, I've got a lot of thoughts and feelings about Dune. And it's not that she didn't do a bad job, but I didn't think she was the right person to play Jessica. But that's just my opinion.
For me, it's not about her. It's about the way Jessica was written. But yeah.
I agreed. And I don't want to go down the Dune, the Dune track. We'll cover Dune in when the movie comes out. We'll definitely get into this then. That said, so I haven't been I haven't seen a lot of Rebecca Ferguson's work. And so I was like, okay. And by episode 6, I'm really enjoying her range of acting and what she's doing. I thought it was a little strange to have a mechanic from the down deep come up and be the sheriff, but they showed me something about her character, which I think makes it work for me that she's the sheriff. there's at one point she's feeling the vibrations of the turbine fan.
Right.
And she know, or she's somewhere, she hears something, or she, you know, her spidey senses tingle and she's like, whoa, something's wrong. And she's, you know, feeling the vibration. So I love that she, they're setting her up to be this person who has this almost extrasensory perception. And if she can apply that to human beings and to human societies, and she can sort of feel her way into where in the silo things are broken, where that fan blade is broken and warped and bent, and get in there and repair that, then she can do her job as sheriff as such. And so I was a little bit, I'm going to watch and wait and see. And I'm really becoming more sold each and every episode with what they're doing with her character.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you described it that way, because that's pretty much exactly the way that she describes it in when it's told from her perspective in the books. You know, that's basically how she looks at the world and how she looks at her new role as sheriff. Is she's like, you know, it's still like a mechanical job. I still have to find where's the wonky bit and how can I get it back into shape in more technical terms.
And I had problems with the way that they did the turbine fan repair. I think that was the weakest.
I'm not mechanical enough.
Well,
I did not care about any kind of discrepancy. Yeah. Okay. It looked awesome. David, get off your high horse. Get out of Alan Sepinwall's domain and come enjoy
I'm
it
fine. I'm
with
fine.
Your jammies on.
Yeah, anyway, outside of that one little quibble I have with that, I think that they did a really good job of showing us who Juliet is rather than telling us. And they did it in the storytelling with the way that she wants to repair things and all that stuff. So I really get who she is, and they did a good job showing and telling me why she ended up in this position.
Yeah. Okay, that's good to hear.
Yeah. Hard to pick a better character than Juliet. I mean, she's the most fleshed out. She's got the most layers, you know, this outward gruffness, this internal vulnerability that she does a great job playing on her face and with her interactions with her not mom, who is apparently everybody's mom on every show on right now. Ted Lasso, Succession, everything. You know, I think that she is certainly the most complex character on the show. Like you said, David, this transition, this sort of using your skills from your previous job to go to your new job is a really interesting and sort of almost relatable thing to look at, is sort of crossing worlds and then being forced to apply skills that you learned completely out of context in a new one. And I think watching her navigate being a fish out of water, watching her sort of wonder if she should even be doing that, has been really enjoyable. If I were going to pick another most favorite character, probably Paul Billings, because he's the most interesting to me in that I can't get a read on him.
Right.
And he's almost a Ned Stark figure, where his adherence to the rules is going, and to like honor is going to get him killed. I just know it. He's just going to die because of this. And
you're putting a wager down.
Except that he didn't turn himself in, so he broke the rules.
True. He did. He did. And, Ned Stark didn't tell his wife a secret, so maybe he broke some rules too in the name of honor.
Yeah,
and in the name of.
So are you putting a bet down? Are you putting a wager down there? Some internet points, John?
Oh, Billings dies before the end of the series. I don't know if it's by the end of the season, and I could be totally wrong. But you know what? I've made wilder predictions before.
Wait, what do you guys think the syndrome is?
I don't know. It's basically the only symptom we have right now is basically like having shaking movements, right?
Yeah, well, there was a sign that that popped up in Mechanical that had, like, you know, it's about shaking and there's like paranoia,
right?
Which is kind of funny, because everyone should be way more paranoid than they are. Like, actually, like, Gloria and Regina are the only logical characters.
Right. I think you and Luke talked about the syndrome a little bit too in your last podcast.
Right.
So
yeah, we did, and I read out the sign there. I don't have it in front of me right now, but yeah, it's very vague. So people online are going crazy. Is it tetanus? Is it an STD? Is it Parkinson's? Is it, you know, just psychological?
Maybe it's just anxiety. Yeah. Maybe everybody's just really nervous about this stuff because they're trapped in a silo. And I wouldn't blame them for having shaky anxiety for living in a silo.
Yeah.
Not to diminish anxiety. It's a terrible thing to live with. It's just, maybe it is anxiety. Maybe this is a psychological
maybe
a psychiatric condition where people are sort of manifesting physically what's going on.
Yeah, and anxiety doesn't make sense, it can express in different ways. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm wondering if it's not something to do with an environmental condition or a lack of something or an addition of something.
Mm-hmm.
Our bodies are designed to receive sunlight. The types of minerals that the micronutrients that we get from our crops. So is it something that's in the water or the air or not in the water or in the air? Maybe there's some sort of deficiency there. That's then leading to the neurological conditions. I don't know. That's just off the top of my head.
No, that's valid. And I do notice that in some ways they are kind of adding a little more rigor to certain areas of the science. Like for instance, they changed the fuel that's used in the generator, and yeah, I understand why they did that. And after speaking to a geologist, and it's definitely done to adhere more scientifically to the realities of the world in which the silos actually sit once you get all the answers.
Right. And then they have to make choices for television that makes sense. So that's where we get into the Tom Shippey thing. He gave a very famous lecture about analyzing the Tolkien, the Lord of the Rings movies versus the books, and do things comport and how do they line up? And so we just sort of call it the Shippey test. So yeah, and there's a lot of things that you have to do, a lot of compromises to make an on-screen representation work and make sense.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you. They've mentioned, I think, a couple of times that there are mines and that if you get in trouble, is that a thing? You can be like on a mining detail, like a prison crew type thing?
We do talk about this a bit more in the episode 6 breakdown that's going to come out right before this one.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. But basically it's something like that. And I think they've actually even expanded on it more than, like, the mines were more of a useful setting in the book than them really getting into the punishment system, although they do refer to it. So I think we're actually going to maybe see more in the show about it than we got from the books on that front.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, it's,
I like that.
Yeah. They've been taking the opportunity to flesh it out a bit more. Cause at first I thought it was going to be one season, one book, and that was going to work fine, except for the fact that, in the second book's a kind of prequel book. So you would have different characters. So I think they're going to have to end up weaving that together with the other books. Now they're actually doing half a season with this, and they're just kind of taking their time more to flesh out the world, to show us more, like make the silo feel more lived in, make it feel like there's more of this community of people who sometimes know each other, sometimes don't. And yeah, we see all these. Yeah, I mean, this is definitely something for TV, all these like festival days.
Another show that this reminds me of is Battlestar Galactica, right? Instead, they were in space on ships, but you had a contained ecosystem to a degree and a limited society. And yeah, it makes me think of that and certain festival days and having a criminal underworld and how do you manage crime and punishment and all that kind of stuff.
A festival day is like one of the most common expositive techniques that people use when building a sci-fi or fantasy world. It sort of shows you the culture of everybody. It gets everybody in the same room.
Yeah.
It can create an inciting event. It's so commonly used these days. Look at Wheel of Time.
Yeah, exactly.
Look at The Lord of the Rings with Bilbo's birthday. You know, it's
right.
Yeah. And it's all, I mean, not even just sci-fi, but, you know, if you watch like a high school comedy, whatever, there's going to be a lot of proms and
Right. Homecoming and.
Yeah. Reasons to get the characters together and a little looser. Right. Although it's interesting with Silo, we don't really see any of our main characters actually ever enjoying the festival. They're always just kind of working through it.
Right. Well, that's true. Nobody gets a day off in the Silo.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. So Juliet, you know, she's used to basically work, sleep, eat. Up top, though, you know, those are those 9-to-5ers, lazy bones.
Cushy life.
I have a question. Where do you guys think the Silo is?
You mean
located
on, assuming that it's on our Earth?
I mean, you make whatever assumptions you feel are valid.
I haven't actually thought about that. I guess That's an interesting question. I guess my just assumption was that it's on Earth and at some point. It seems very Earth-like.
Okay.
We have gravity.
Right.
We have...
Everyone has an American accent, ostensibly.
There you go.
Yeah.
We have crops. Yeah, we have you know, things growing up, you know, down, the roots are down and they go up, you know, so...
Right.
Yeah, I didn't have a sense other than that. So I don't know. I haven't really thought beyond that.
Okay. All right, John.
I would say somewhere in the northern U.S.
Why?
Like it could be California. I think more likely the Northeast because of the trees that we saw. It just seemed more Northeast forest to me.
You mean on the
screen?
On the monitor. Yeah. And when they went out, I mean, I guess we don't know what was real or not with that vision, but
yeah,
that Holston had, but yeah, I guess those could be northeastern trees, and maybe I'm just talking at my rear end, but for now I'm going to say that it's the Northeast.
Okay. All right. And what do you guys think of the relics that they found?
Those are a great show.
I mean, obviously we're all horrified. Yeah, we're horrified by the past.
I loved, you know, that's one thing is fun being a podcaster into your television is, you know, you go and, hey, well, what's the story behind Pez? Obviously, I grew up with Pez.
Right.
I never knew the history of Pez. No. So I went and watched a YouTube video about it and posted it in our Discord. And,
yeah, I learned a lot.
It was a lot of fun. It was fun to see people or Luke was like, what's a Pez? What is this thing? And it's like, oh, great. So I think the overall relics are a great plot device and an interesting way to have some fun in the show and to build the mystery box component. And especially if it's a handy cam, it's a Pez dispenser. What do you mean you don't know what it is? It's like watching TikTok videos or Instagram reels where the youth of today are discovering things like cassette tapes or how to dial a rotary telephone.
Right. You know,
right. As a Gen Xer, I have a good laugh at some of that stuff. But hey, I'm the one that's sooner out the door than the rest of these folks. So. Right. Seeing the relics is fun for me in that regard.
Yeah.
I feel old.
Right.
Okay, two George-related questions. Do you think the Gloria that they mentioned, who is his aunt, do you think that's the same Gloria we saw in the first episode who had the, you know, was telling Allison that they didn't want women like them to get pregnant? And the other question is, do you think George was named after that Georgia book that was given to Juliet?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
Because this is a TV show, and so no one will have the same name. And I guess the second one, yeah, I think if it's a family heirloom and it's that important, I think, you know, George, Georgia, makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, where was that photo book from?
It was Georgia.
It was Georgia.
It was a,
okay.
Yeah. It was a travel guide for kids. For,
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was. I thought that was a really great example of Rebecca Ferguson's acting. Just, you know, the way she... was looking like her mind was being blown silently, but without realizing somebody had laid the flowers down.
Yeah. And that was a great little detail that you had to sort of go back, which is a fun stuff of a show like this is. Yeah. Cause I remember Holston at the beginning moving the flowers intentionally.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was, what's that about? And then the flowers keep coming up. And then if you go back and rewatch that, you can see the flowers in the lower right-hand corner of the watcher's TV screen. And it's like, oh, very, very nicely done.
Yeah. How do you think Holston knew about, you know, the mirror?
Oof, no idea. Yeah.
Maybe he had intuition. He was being watched. I don't know.
Maybe he was getting the syndrome.
No, I think he knows. So I think he discovered.
You think he found out
somewhere?
I think
he found something out that was cluing him in.
Well, I wonder if he looked into that hard drive from his wife, although he's not a computer person, so he would have needed help.
Mm. Yeah, I'm curious about the mystery tunnel that was on the hard drive as well, this lower level thing that was in the map.
Yeah.
So obviously a big hook in there, you know, we haven't got there yet. So,
yeah,
but the drill thing was amazing. That was a very cool piece of.
Yeah, that was so cool.
I can't believe other people don't know about that.
Yeah. Well, it was behind a wall. And like, I mean, I thought I have to go back and watch this because I initially thought that George found out about it because of the blueprints. But then he mentioned in the last episode that Juliet showed it to him. I was like, what? Really? So I guess.
Yeah. Interesting.
I know. I mean, yeah. I guess she just spent a lot of, you know, her childhood time was down like down playing in the mines. Yeah.
Right.
And what's your favorite theory for the answer to life, the universe and silo everything?
John.
Aliens.
No, I do think that somebody is still out there in charge of things. I don't think that they've died out. Clearly, a large part of the power structure is unaware of a mm-hmm. greater force based on John's and based on all of the law enforcement, basically, besides judicial. I think judicial knows some of it, but I don't think they know all of it. I think perhaps Judge Meadows is sort of the bridge between the powers that be and the governed. But yeah, I think maybe based on the images, I think maybe Holston did die. Mm-hmm. And maybe he didn't. You know what I mean? I can't even say definitively either way is whether he died or not. But either way, somebody's keeping them in there for some reason. I don't think that this is just a self-sufficient thing.
You're not sure whether you believe the green or the desolation as reality?
Right.
Okay. What about you, David? Do you think green or desolation is real?
You know, I'm okay with not pursuing those questions for myself at this stage.
Okay.
I'm going to let the show walk me through that.
Okay.
I'm going to pay attention and see what transpires. I think what I'm paying attention to more right now is the different power centers.
Mm-hmm.
So we have civilian administration. We have the sheriffs who kind of keep the peace at this superficial level.
Yeah.
Judicial, what is judicial doing? You know, is there that many crimes? Are there that many contracts and IP, you know, disputes going on? How much are they having to litigate and manage? So I'm wondering what judicial's doing. And then what are these janitors about? And are they separate? Are they an attached entity or are they a separate entity? What is IT's role in that? Because IT has to maintain and monitor these systems or they would conceivably. So would they not know about all these wires running around connected to all these cameras? And, you know, so now we have one power center, Bernard, in charge of two power centers. You know, he's in charge of IT and the civil administration. So I'm kind of watching who is what. I really think that Bernard is playing a very different game than we all think he's playing. I think Common obviously has some bigger secrets that he's holding on to. So I think I think Sims was a frenemy to Marnes, you know, like we're buddies. I'm keeping tabs on you.
Okay. So you agree with
yeah,
me.
Yeah. Total frenemy situation.
I'm like real
yeah.
Friends.
We'll have a drink and we'll talk and we'll, you know, shoot the shit. But yeah. I'm also doing it because I'm watching you and I know you're kind of watching me. So I'm fronting some stuff. So yeah, I'm really into the political dynamics.
Interpersonal.
And I'm just going to let the show tell me what it needs to tell me about. Obviously, I clocked when the viewfinder reset and the whole stuff about stars.
Right.
I'm just collecting that information right now. I don't have a theory yet that I can derive.
Okay. All right. And John, what are your hopes for the rest of the season? What do you hope to find out or see or experience?
I think I need to at least know what the condition of outside is.
Okay.
I hope that that's not the end of the mystery box, you know?
No.
I hope that there's more to that. And I hope that that's only like one piece of the mystery. And so that is, I think, what would be satisfying to me if I know what happened to Holston and what was his wife's name?
Allison.
I feel ashamed because she was a great character. Mm. And if I know what happened to them and I know what the condition is outside, I will be happy.
Okay. All right. Any last thoughts before we go?
No, I just enjoying the show and excited to see what they do for us. I really am interested in, yeah, like I was saying before about how the political and then the, is it aliens? Is it environmental disaster? Is it a psychological experiment? I'm interested to see how from the bottom all these political and sociological questions get answered then by the sort of top down, you know, what and why are these people in there? So, one other thing I was going to say too, the revolution? I'm sorry, I'm blanking
the rebellion.
The rebellion. Thank you. That was it. I think the rebellion might be an apocryphal story and it might actually not be real. And they're using that. I think they're using that as a way to whitewash history in some way. So,
okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah, that sounds like something that judicial especially would get up to, right?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
John, yeah. Any last thoughts?
Yeah. I will add one more thing that I want to see by the end of the season is at least who is behind the janitorial door.
Okay.
I don't need to know exactly what they're doing, but I need to know sort of what it looks like a little bit. And it almost could be, I'm going to spoil some Severance right now, just a little bit. I would like something like the goats. You know,
yeah.
Just like what is happening?
Rando.
What is happening? You don't need to answer it for me, but just throw something in there that makes me go, what the heck is happening? I think this show has it in it. So let's hope for that.
Yeah, I have. I'm very excited. I think we've passed like the turning point where I think, the beginning is like this hook where you fall in love with these characters and then you lose them. And then that's hard for people to cope with. And now, and then there's that whole murder mystery element. And now we've reached a turning point where it's really, I think it's full steam ahead to the finale. We had that mind blowing end of 6. I think 7's going to build on that. And I have a good idea how this is going to end. And I think everyone's going to be screaming at their televisions. So nice. I can't wait to experience it. Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool. I like the name of the next episode too. It sounds like a cult. So
yeah, the Flame Keepers.
Looks good.
Yeah. So yeah, We'll Shift Dust will return with our regular coverage, breaking down episode 7, as John said, The Flame Keepers, in just a few days, though you can always join us anytime on the Silo channel of the Lorehounds Discord to talk about the show and link in the show notes. Plus, the Lorehounds have lots to keep your ears busy while you wait. David, other Lorehound Jean, not to be confused with John, and I are just about to record our MCU coverage of Across the Spider-Verse, which will be coming out this week as well.
So good. So good. It was an amazing film.
Yeah. Best of the year, David?
It's right. If I don't know what... There's some other things coming out. We've got Dune. We've got Oppenheimer. We've got a few other things.
Yeah.
The contender. It's definitely... Okay. Right now, it's in pole position. It's in the number one position for sure.
Yeah.
All right. That's quite the endorsement. So I'm looking forward to hearing that podcast as I edit it.
And John, what are some of the other Lorehounds episodes people should keep an eye out for right now?
Yeah, I think if you like this stuff, you probably like some dense plots. Check out our Silmarillion stories. Check out our Earthsea coverage with Ursula K. Le Guin, with Marilyn R. Pukila. Everybody's got a middle initial. Maybe I should start using
it's
one.
Very,
I'm John Geronicus Larkin.
three middle initials.
Ooh.
Three
Alicia
middle
Carly,
initials.
Canoza Quay, Seeleman Brenner.
Wow.
Wow. I'm impressed.
Well, at least, I was going to say, Coach Beard was impressive enough with his triple citizenship in the final episode of Ted Lasso, but you have triple
hashtag goals.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we've got a lot coming out, including a 2.5-hour episode of Ted Lasso. I have to go edit after this.
We've got two live watches. We're going to do a Studio Ghibli film on our Discord, and then we've got our Star Wars Film Fest coming on. We're going to live watch those as well before we podcast about them. So we've got a lot going on. There's a community schedule on our Discord. There's a place where you can see all the things that we've got coming up for a month. So
great. Yeah. And so you can find us all there. You can also always find me on Twitter at Alicia CB.
Yeah. You can follow us at The Lorehounds on Twitter. You can go to thelorehounds.com. You can find our podcast. You can find your podcast, Alicia. Mm-hmm. It's all there. So check it out if you want more.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us for this special edition of We'll Shift Dust, a Silo TV podcast. New to the show? Then explore the full episodes and subscribe in your favorite podcasting platform to get the next episode as soon as it's released. And a 5-star rating wherever you listen is always appreciated. We'd love for you to share this episode and podcast with any friends you think should be watching and listening. After all, we are friends of the Silo here. So don't let us hear you say you want to go outside.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. we'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the Roaring Twenties. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.